do. Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D, and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Tom.
We're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So, Simon, are you ready?
I am ready.
Tom, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I don't know what that was. I think that's a dinosaur noise. I'm going with the dinosaur noise. This week...
No comment.
I thought about making a noise, but I'm glad I didn't.
There you go. No, you're never beating that now anyway. This week, we are taking a journey to Isla Nublar as we dive into all of the legacy of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World in this week's episode. This week, we played Jurassic Park, The Legacy of Isla Nublar.
Officially, Jurassic World, The Legacy of Isla Nublar.
Jurassic World, The Legacy of Isla Nublar.
I can see why you may have got confused, because we have changed the board partway through play.
We originally said Jurassic Park.
That's, yeah, absolutely. Jurassic World, The Legacy of Isla Nublar, was designed by Prospero Hall.
Now, that's a conglomerate, right? Or is it the cousin of Arsenio Hall, the actor?
I don't know.
No, it's a collaborative game design studio.
And they've done... What else did they do? They did some of the Funko games, is that right?
Yeah, I think they're the in-house team, as it were, for Funko now. That's so they did Pan Am, I believe.
They did Pan Am, yeah.
Pan Am is excellent.
I'm just having a look at the list, yeah. Pan Am, Horrified.
Horrified is
of course.
Excellent.
And the Raft of Disney Villainous Games.
Also excellent.
Yeah,
well rated all.
Yeah, they've got some real good pedigree, or at least building some, that's for sure. The art is by Raf Lomatan and Victor Maristani? Maristane? I don't know.
I was just trying to look for the... Maristani.
I'm so sorry. again, for that. We'll play 1 to 4 players... And it says here we'll take 90 to 150 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
It's a beefy boy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say at the very least. And has an MSRP of how much can you find this for on the internet these days?
Well, I think the MSRP is now $99.99. I've seen it for a 10 or less generally. So you're looking around 90 to 100.
90 to 100. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of game, though, to be fair.
It's £90 on Magic Madhouse and various others, so, yeah.
That's pretty
expensive.
That is a lot of cash.
It's a big game.
It is, and we should mention, I suppose, that this was, in fact, a gifted review copy for us sent through by Funko, so massive thanks and appreciation to you guys for getting that to us.
Yes, and also worth noting, if you think that may colour our opinions, that is our disclaimer at the start of the episode.
Do you feel coloured, Wayne?
Very. No. Genuinely not. I think we're going to be as objective as possible. But for those that might think it would, you know, influence us in any way, just know that we were sent to free.
I'll put it this way: we don't play a lot of legacy games. This is a heavy legacy game, or pretty heavy legacy game.
Yeah, relatively,
And we have lost interest in several legacy games after a few sessions, and you guys have nearly completed the campaign on this now?
Yeah, we're about 2/3 through.
Yeah, so that's hopefully something of a positive review to start with.
Exactly that, because this was free. We had no, I suppose, what's the word? Monetary investment in needing to complete it.
No.
But we still want to complete it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I don't know if I should say this now or later. I think, I don't know if I would have played this if I was having to spend my own money to be able to.
Right.
But boy, am I enjoying playing it.
Good. So we'll hold that thought and dig into that a little bit later. And also insert my blurb now, because I missed that at the beginning of the episode. In Jurassic...
Without a script, it's just gone immediately off the rails.
I know, it's gone right out of the window. In Jurassic World, The Legacy of Isla Nublar, you play through 12 adventures in which you will customise an entirely unique game board and breed new dinosaurs that you cannot unmake. Your team's fateful choices will have a lasting impact, creating your own Isla Nublar story. Your experience will culminate in an endlessly replayable game of your own creation.
Yeah, the highly venomous Stegosaurus is becoming a bit of a problem.
Yeah, so needless to say, before we go any further, and as we've mentioned in passing, this is a legacy game, so there will be an inevitable degree of spoiler in this.
Yes.
We'll try not to go into exact detail on every specific piece of the adventure, but the only way we can really explore in our discussion the full detail of the game is to mention some of the stuff that you won't unlock until later adventures.
Yeah, quite right. There's going to be some spoiler stuff in
here.
So
be warned, but also listen to as much as you can to hear our enthusiasm before you knock off or skip forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we'll do a pre-warning if anything real game-changing or breaking comes into it. But yeah, just be aware. There's going to be...
Spoiler alert, dinosaurs get out.
Yeah, dinosaurs... Spoiler alert, things go wrong.
I mean, if you've seen any of the Jurassic Park films, you probably know most of the story beats anyway.
Exactly. It follows it pretty closely. Let's start, as we always do then, by digging into the components and art design. I would like to start with a general comment on the art design, which I think is fucking tremendous.
Yeah, massive props to the aforementioned name-mangled two artists and the general team.
Yeah.
I really like the design of this.
This is... I'm coming in on game 7. This is the only time I've played, because I haven't managed to tie up to play this with you guys yet. But, like, the first thing I think I said when we sort of sat down and started pulling out all the components was that I really like the artwork of all of the characters that you can play as.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they don't look like the actors from the films, they are immediately recognisable as those characters,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a real credit.
There's strong inspiration from the actors' characterisation, then stylised across the artwork.
Yeah, like Ian Malcolm with his
spotted
spare
Ian
chest
Malcolm,
up,
yeah, the Ian Malcolm pose, and then sort of spiraled out, and I was like, actually, I recognise all of these characters.
Yeah, that's great. You have these individual dinosaur mats or little player boards, I guess, or dinosaur boards, with full colour art on those, and they're great. They're in this sort of Hammer horror Golden Age of comic books type.
Yeah, super
style.
Evocative, really dynamic and aggressive looking for the
most
part.
You could see them being a movie poster, like each of them being movie posters.
Absolutely, and they're really, really cool.
Yeah, they're really cool. Some of those I think would be really good as like full-size prints.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, definitely.
They're real good. The game board is large.
It's too wide for your table.
Nah, it's a beast.
Yeah, you do need a good amount of table space for this, has to be said. Between the board itself and all of the cards, room areas and tokens that go on them.
And the dinosaur cards and all
that. You do need a good amount of space. So do be warned, if you're playing on a coffee table, you're not playing on a coffee table.
Yeah.
The board is great. It's one of these weird double fold but double thickness almost, so it doesn't have a break in it.
It's like that. It seems to be a Prospero Hall design twist, isn't it? That double fold thing.
It's interesting. On the back, looks like almost kind of luggage in a sense, like a travel pack. And then,
that's right.
Yeah, the main board side is glorious, multicolored. You've got 6 different sectors, which are different zones, which are brightly colored to denote. And you see each of those sectors then played out at the bottom of the board to hold your deck.
Yeah, I mean, they ultimately just tell you sort of the order in which things activate, right?
Yes, that's it.
It's definitely got this kind of, I'm not going to say old-timey, but that's not right, but kind of like that's 40s to 60s.
It's slightly sepia.
Kind of, yeah. Everything's that sort of designy vibe, but everything kind of looks leather-bound or, you know, very organic. Or
yeah, like you're going on a grand adventure on something prior to the jet set, perhaps.
That's right. Yeah, you're on a grand voyage.
That's it.
That's right. Yeah, it very much feels like that. So just a note on the art design in general. It's pretty superb. They've even gone down to sort of printing the inside of the box in a very sort of attractive yellow, red, black sort of hazard print, which is really, really nice.
It's amazing.
Various symbols on it.
With the little "this game belongs to."
Yeah, totally unnecessary.
It's fantastic. But,
really, really nice to note. Let's dig into some of the components a little bit. The cards, tons of cards, and there will be more as you unlock them through the game.
Yeah. What is it? Sector cards, item cards. You've got all the event round cards which change from game to game.
Yeah. Yep.
You've got pieces that go on the board, whether they be special event tokens, you've got certain followers or animals or creatures.
Got some custom dice.
The dice are great, I think, particularly the D20, which is used at times, is effectively the piece of amber with the DNA trapped inside of it. Mm-hmm. I became convinced after four games that it wasn't perfectly weighted, or it was at least cursed, because it rolled zone 15 numerous times in a row and severely hampered our progression, but that's by the by. I think in actual fact there's nothing wrong with the dice whatsoever.
This is fine.
You've got just loads of character cards that are double-sided, right?
Yeah,
so they serve one function when you pick them as a character, or eventually some of those characters retire and they serve a different function as like a support role later on.
Yeah, there's like legacy characters.
But don't go flipping those cards until you're told.
Yeah, and the cards are all, they've all got I want to say scratch and sniff. That's not the right thing. They're scratch cards.
You can sniff them if you like, Tom.
Yeah. There's loads of scratchy stuff.
All the upgrades are little like scratch cards, and then you get this like super satisfying Velociraptor claw that you can use to scratch all the silvery stuff off your cards.
I've played a few Legacy games now, and I think it is actually more satisfying than always adding stickers to stuff. I like scratching stuff off as a variety,
revealing things, rather than getting a bucket of sticker sheets.
Yeah.
You like half of the stuff is reveal, half of it is stickers. Some of the stickers are transparent.
Yes, a good number, because you're permanently and progressively adding things to your board. So as the blurb said, you are developing your own version of Isla Nubla. So you're putting down roads and barriers and other items, which are semi-transparent, so you don't ruin that board game art. So some things do over-sticker permanently, and you'll be putting down buildings and other tokens.
Well, it's really useful because you have roads and barriers, for example, that can occupy the same areas.
Yes.
So if you put a road down and then you decide to put a barrier over it, it's no different, really, than putting a barrier down and then putting a road over it, because the artwork's interlock and the stickers are transparent intentionally to allow them to overlap really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, there's the dinosaurs themselves, which roam around the island, which are these really chunky, you know, it's almost like Lego brick level of, if this dropped on the floor and you stood on it, it would like damage you, kind of heavyweight plastic.
Yeah, they're not like a full cast of a dinosaur, right? No. They're like the torso and the head. But they're like action pose casts of dinosaurs.
Yeah, they're like sort of, it's like the T-Rex bursting through.
The T-Rex is bursting through an electric fence. Yeah, exactly. The
Velociraptors
are
coming through the door.
Coming through the doors into
fantastic.
The security center from the original Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah, they're kind of a scene.
Great.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting design to us. I think they're fantastic.
Those are surprisingly high quality. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
The carnivores being bright red, the herbivores being bright green. I've seen some people online have done custom paint jobs on them, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
But yeah, they serve their purpose really well. They're quite satisfying. Rather than just being another cardboard token, you've got this monstrosity of a piece of dinosaur chunking its way around.
Absolutely. You've got an absolute ton of unlockable folder file-y things, like these A4, almost A4
folios and envelopes.
Loads of envelopes. Big envelopes
boxes.
As well.
It's a legacy game.
Yeah, you get all that stuff in it. Big, significant boxes.
And possibly one of the most satisfying pieces is the individual adventure books. For each adventure, there's 10 main adventures, the finale, and then some possible ongoing game. For each main adventure, you get what's effectively a little comic book, which describes what's going on in the world of Jurassic Park, or Jurassic World as it becomes. Gives you a load of good flavour, like someone's up to something, or there's an investor coming, so you need to show your best.
I'm going
to
ask, I assume that all of the previous adventures basically follow the main events of the films in order. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. Yes. I feel like you're probably better qualified than I might be. I've seen each of the movies, apart from the most recent, I think.
But yeah, you could take a look through each of the comics in order, and it'll give you, in real brief, high level, you'd recognise it.
Yeah, it won't be every beat of every movie, because it necessarily needs to be a capture of a screenshot, almost, like a glimpse into each bit, but you definitely see the change through.
They're sort of key sequences and scenes.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. There is tons of that. And you also get, obviously, your rule book and your ring binder, like a bindery thing, not ring binder.
Yeah, it's kind of
a ring.
Yeah, a single ring reference.
Reference deck.
Sure.
Right?
I'm not sure what they officially call it, but yes.
Like that.
So lots of cards, probably 40, 50 different cards.
I think they said reference binder.
reference binder will work. It's, I don't know what even size that would be, A6.
Yeah, something like that.
Pretty small, double-sided, all connected together, numbered and bound together with it, an unclippable ring, which will give you most of the reference you need should you need to check a rule on anything, say your barriers or how a follower works.
They're
or
all
movement.
Like arranged in alphabetical order.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Some of them are switched out and replaced with updated versions.
And you get a ton of standees as well. You don't necessarily need minis for this game because obviously the dinosaurs are the stars of the show and there are so many characters, it just wouldn't be practical.
I think we, well, yeah, I think we're up to 20 characters.
That's a lot.
You start with maybe 10. We've unlocked a lot.
Yeah, so yeah, you get a little standee sort of representation of, your character there.
Slowly building the entire cast of all the Jurassic Park / World films.
That's right. Any other components there that you want to talk about that we've missed?
I think that's the majority of it. Yeah. Fair, lots of cardboard tokens, so you get different rooms that you use in each area of the game. So you've got like a visitor centre and a maintenance building and so on. Each of those has their own kind of tokens, which we'll cover more in the, gameplay.
I think we need
area.
To talk about how the gameplay works, really, to sort of understand how they work. But in general, they're ultimately just a bunch of cardboard tokens.
Yeah, a bunch of cardboard tokens. I mean, in general, then, the production quality is pretty good throughout.
Strikingly
good. I
mean,
it's pretty freaking good. Yeah, I've got no major issues with it. How would you rate the production value?
I'm going to be honest. Obviously, we didn't pay for the game. Mm. There's a lot of cardboard in the box, right? And it is an expensive game, so
it is.
I often sort of think sometimes it's nice to get sort of more luxury components for the price. For the price point of this sort of game.
I understand.
But I guess having seen how much content there is in the game, you can sort of understand the price point.
And you also have to remember the tax that they pay for the license.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of factors to consider, really, when you come to price point versus physical content, because you have to weigh up, as much as anything these days, shipping cost. If you put a lot more plastic in here, you'll increase the weight by 40% and add another tenner to the game for the sake of plastic, which you don't, for the most part, really need.
No, you know,
you get things like follower tokens, and it's a small cardboard square that you put on the board. You could have made those minis, but you wouldn't have gained any gameplay benefit or really even much of an aesthetic for the change. And also, I think, and we have mentioned this in other things, a lot of the cost, if you will, of a game is the design, not the value of the pieces get. So for me, I would put this somewhere edging towards a 5 out of 5 for quality of components.
I probably lean more towards a 4. I think I probably personally lean towards sort of luxury components rather than volume of components.
Yeah, the question, sorry, do you want to give it a rating?
Leaning towards a 4.
Okay.
But I did really like the artwork, like particularly the character artwork, and I really like the dinosaur artwork, so I've got no complaints.
I think the question I always ask myself is, do I own games that give me a better production for the price that I've paid?
Hmm.
Right, and the answer for me is yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I can think of 3 or 4 examples in my collection right now. With that said, then, this is a nice easy 4, though. The fact that it is 90 to 100 quid is making me go, but it is like, it's like a low 4, but it's an easy 4. Mm-hmm. So
a four out of five is pretty damn good, I think. So.
I think the production is excellent. Yeah, it is an excellent production, but it is expensive. So just duly noted.
Yeah.
On to the core mechanics of the game then. And this is a cooperative one, right? I don't know if we even mentioned it, but it is a co-op game.
Yeah, you're doing your best not to get eaten alive or losing your dinosaur exhibits as the game progresses.
Absolutely. So normally when I ask the winner of the game, how do you win? I suppose let's all chip in. So how did we even survive the last one? I suppose
how
that's
you
the key
survive,
word, right? Yeah,
unlike so. The tour group on the north of the island.
No, that never happened, Tom.
Rumours.
That's a rumour.
Rumours of the savaging of that tour group.
Wildly
exaggerated.
How did they get there? There was no evidence that they were...
They just arrived on a boat.
Exactly.
They got there.
Quite. But typically, the game will always play 5 rounds, right? Unless you lose before then through being bad at the game or the game shafting you in some way. But assuming you are doing okay, the game will play over 5 rounds.
Yes, and each round has its own card, and that will be a mixture. And depending on what part of the game you are currently at, will either be dinosaur activity, just pure random, one of the five or six that are always in the game mixed up in, you'll get one of them per round you need to deal with. Later on, there'll be adventure-specific round cards. So the last one we had a specific card for round one, a specific card for round five, and then a mixture of attraction round cards, which are mixed in the middle, and they've been introduced throughout the previous
game. One of the for this game, one of them was specific to this scenario, right? And two of them were from a general deck.
That's right. Yeah. So as the game goes on, and each of these round cards will give you a specific criteria to meet. So it might be get this particular person or group to this particular zone or area where a dinosaur might be. It might also then ask you to bring certain gear or equipment to the same space.
Yeah.
And you need to achieve that pretty much as quickly as you can, or you might face a consequence.
Take your billionaire to go and see the most dangerous dinosaur in the park.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea.
So, yeah, quite. Each round, you're going to get a round card and it'll give you a thing to do. And typically, if you don't do that thing, as Simon says, you'll get a consequence. And if you get five of those, you lose.
Yeah.
It's five points.
Yeah, points of consequences.
And the consequences range from 0 to 2, right?
Correct.
And you flip them over at random is a little bit of like randomized, how bad was this consequence?
Yeah, more often than not, it will be a 1. So, and you're going to check that at the end of the round. It's interesting. It's sort of typical of these sort of cooperative games, right? Where you do the good things and then the bad thing happens.
I mean, this game is all one big crisis management, event management, action economy management game.
You know you're going into each adventure, hopefully starting out reasonably well and then going, okay, what's going to go wrong? And that happens every round. So as long as you know that it's going to be a case of what's gone wrong this time.
Yeah.
And in addition to those round objectives, the adventure booklet, comic, whatever you want to call it, also gives you a set of ongoing objectives which don't necessarily give you a consequence if you don't complete them on any given round, but also do need to be completed before the adventure
just
finishes.
Additional general objectives that have to be completed
In order for you to win the adventure. And on the, I suppose, in opposition to them giving you like a consequence, which happens with the round cards, completing the adventure objectives will typically give you items or a bonus.
Yeah, they give you a reward to help you manage the rest of the stuff that's going on.
Exactly.
And actually, I mean, those are obviously like a real core of the game because they sort of resolve in a unique way.
Yeah. Well, the item cards, you mean?
So. No,
the room-based objectives.
The room-based objectives. I gather from what you guys had said that they also have got more difficult, more complicated.
Yeah, they've got
absolutely
more complex.
Absolutely,
exactly.
Yes.
Again,
we are in spoiler territories if that wasn't already clear, but beginning of adventure number 6, we pretty much reset everything in the board, and we had changed from Jurassic Park to Jurassic World, and all of the rooms changed from a slightly more basic version to a far more advanced version. Which
Kind
of complicated things somewhat.
Absolutely, absolutely it did. If you've ever played Pandemic, it has a similar, I suppose, structure where you have a series or a number of actions that you do, and then the park has a go. Like in Pandemic, you have 4 actions, and then the bad thing happens. The only difference, I suppose, in this is A, the level of complexity, but then also, as opposed to the bad thing happening between turns, the bad thing happens after everyone's turn is finished. So you get 3 actions each, which is quite tight, right? In a 3-player game, you'd get 3 each.
Yeah, effectively, there's 9 actions to take, and you split them equally between players, and then the spare one, if you've got an even number of players, will go to whoever needs it at the time, which I quite like, really, as a hangover. Because when I first read it, I thought, oh, you get fewer actions if there's even players. I'm like, oh, hang on, though.
The action economy is quite cleverly designed, right, around the number of actions. I guess, did you guys feel it was particularly different when you had less players?
Because
you could be in less places at once, right?
I did feel
even if you got more actions.
Personally, I felt like it was different because it feels like, I feel like I could. Yes, you're in less places, but you can achieve more things.
Yes.
Yeah, right. I think it's a well-achieved balance for the most part. Is that, as you say, you can do more where you are, but you won't be in as many places.
I don't think I'd like it at 4 players.
We've not done a 4-player, have we?
No, but I don't think I'd like it.
We've mostly done 3. I think, I mean, because it's gaming by consensus, in a sense. It would depend on your play group.
Big chunky co-op games, they do have a tendency to slow down. It's not necessarily analysis paralysis, right? There's just a lot more discussion about what you're going to do.
Yeah,
group thinking. Yeah,
and because there's always a lot going on. You know, you guys were talking about how to get the wiring sorted, and I either choose to also join in that conversation, or I try and focus on
the DNA restructure.
Yeah. But then if you guys are bargaining on one of my actions to help you guys do your thing, and I'm like,
we need to borrow one of your actions to finish our thing.
So it can get a little tricky. And so, yeah, I'd agree. I think I would never want to play this at four, particularly.
Yeah, it would be a little bit, there is that side of it. And then also the fact that I think only having two things I can do, I feel like I wouldn't be able to achieve as much.
So I want to talk about the rooms.
Yeah, okay, right? Talk
because
about the rooms.
I thought those were really cool. It's not just a game of crisis management chasing around resources or positioning on the board. Three of your objectives, I mean, you've got what, like five rounds worth of most of those are basically objectives.
Yeah, problems.
Plus three or four things that you need to do from the book, right? Three out of the four rooms are basically puzzles.
Yeah, they're almost like mini escape rooms or mini
games. They're little
mini
games. And they're not each individually super, super complicated, but they're different enough to be interesting and relatively simple to solve. But everything is about the action economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about trying to resolve those puzzles in as efficient way as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That you can manage.
Yeah, the more
which I think is really cool.
The more logical you are, the more this will behoove your temperament towards it, I think. I can see people seeing that this is a part of the core game and really not gelling with it, unfortunately.
Hmm.
For me and for us generally, I think we'd like that kind of thing. And as you say, they're not super complicated. It's, some of them are as simple as flip a bunch of tokens and see what you get. Others are more like a sliding block puzzle, which gets slightly more complicated as you go through.
Yeah.
And just kind of working out what needs to be where. But the action economy is the key.
They are essentially ways to distract you from the round-to-round objectives. So the round-to-round objectives are the things that will get you the consequences, which will lose you the game.
Yes.
Not doing the adventure objectives, or the room objectives, as we're calling them, that won't lose you the game necessarily straight away. It won't give you consequences, but you know they have to be done at some point, and so they are deliberately taking your time away from doing.
Are time sinks.
Yeah, they are time sinks from having to deal with the round to round stuff. So it's very interesting in that way. You're like, is there anywhere I can sneak in and do a little bit of a room thing and then deal with this other like round to round thing, which is going to get us?
Yeah, it can feel like a mad scramble at times, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think it's quite fun.
I think it could be frustrating depending on how your previous games have gone so far, how you set up your world, as it were. But I like it overall. I think it's a fun concept to have spaces on the main island board you go to, and then you jump onto the room specific board within that to work out these little puzzles.
Absolutely.
So when you're spending your turns sort of running around trying to complete these objectives, right, there's also a balance between trying to predict what the game is going to do, the sector cards, and how the dinosaurs are going to behave.
Yeah, that's right. Because during the start of each round, you're going to have these sort of sector cards laid out. And it's one card per sector.
They're little like programming cards.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. And for the most part, they're face down. Yeah. And on the sort of reverse side or the face up side of them, will be sort of symbols which will tell you how the dinosaurs on the island will move around and activate. And because you can't see them, you don't know what the dinosaurs are going to do.
Yeah.
Unless you deliberately scout that area
or you happen to be in that area.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Which is interesting. So, as you say, Tom, part of it is determining what knowledge you have at the beginning of the round, and trying to risk manage how the dinosaurs are going to activate.
Because you can also get consequences by letting the dinosaurs kill each other.
Yeah, which, right?
You
which
can
they
lose
will
the
do.
Game through just avoiding the dinosaurs and letting them, you know, letting all the carnivores eat the herbivores.
We got so close this last
Very
adventure.
Close.
Yeah, real close.
So was it three different carnivores all chasing around the brachiosaur?
And we ended up with a couple of them on like one health point left, and obviously
four of the dinosaurs were on one health left.
That's bad news. Yeah.
It's fine. Nothing to see here. We got the investment. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's all that matters. So, again, that's another way of stretching your action economy, right? Is worrying about these big hulking dinosaurs stomping around the place, potentially eating each other.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I can achieve the main objective. I can achieve a side objective.
Your tour group. Yeah.
Or I can stop everyone dying. Or maybe I can do a bit of both each turn.
Yeah.
But you can take any player's action in any turn. So it might be that Tom manages to get the power back on so I can slide a block to finish an objective, which then unlocks an item which Wayne can pick up to then help move to the next objective along, or herd a dinosaur or all kinds. Or,
yeah, exactly. It's all interesting and clever ways of pulling your actions away from the central premise.
There's always loads of stuff going on to think about.
Yeah, there's always something to do, right? You never feel like you have a wasted turn, at least. There's always something you can achieve.
Yeah, there's always some simple turns you can take. So you can search in the area you are, which might help you pick up more items. It will also reveal that sector's actions for the end of the round. If you don't already know what's going to happen, you can search and find out what's likely to happen.
Yeah.
Or you can research a dinosaur. If you can safely move into the space, you can research them on your turn and find out a little about them, which will go into the end game zone.
Yeah, other things you can do on your turn. Obviously, you can move. And running around the board is one way you're going to have to do that at some point.
Yeah.
You
need to go between the buildings to solve the puzzles, or you need to be escorting tour groups
around the map to different places.
Ignorant billionaires around the island.
Exactly. You can typically move a bit faster if you've got a vehicle or if you're moving along roads. And whether you've got those things depends on some of the decisions that you've made during the sort of legacy process of the game.
I still feel like we've made some really poor decisions.
So you guys have been adding various sort of sets of action cards, item cards.
Yeah, that's
to
right.
The deck over the course of the game, right? So many of them, as you complete an objective, you'll be unlocking new cards to get added into the item deck that will then be potentially recycled or may not ever come out again, right? There's sort of like always a stream of new content
new
being added in.
Stuff. Mm. Exactly. Right. You can also add barriers to the map as well. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can add to the map, and that will determine how well you can move around
the
map.
I really like the sort of like the development aspect to the board, where you're building like a road network and building a network of barriers and electric fences to try and not just like mitigate for the game that you're in, but long-term plan out the layout of your park, which
absolutely.
Is really cool.
It's been genuinely quite exciting each time you get to stick something onto the board as a permanent addition, tempered somewhat maybe by the fear of the unknown. Like, we're not sure what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So we don't, like, oh, here's a new thing, put it down. And you're like, oh.
It's part and parcel.
I don't know
of
where that's going to be harmful or beneficial.
Well, you guys sort of mentioned it a couple of times, but you put down a new dinosaur at some point during the game, right? And
decided
where to place it and then have regretted it ever since.
It's interesting.
They tease and tempt you with bonuses depending on where you place the additions. And I think that's quite clever because it does. It doesn't force your hand, but it does make it that bit more kind of daring do and adventurous.
Yeah.
To go, all right, we'll be brave and put it somewhere dodgy because we get a bonus now.
It's something of the nature of legacy games, right? Where the mystery and the surprise and the unknown and the... You can never account for it, right? Because you don't know what the game design's got in mind. So you kind of have to, for the most part, give it your best guess. And I disagree. I don't think we've done a huge amount of bad decisions.
No,
maybe
it's not terrible.
Yeah.
I think you're always going to want to have something... One space to the right, or a little bit further, or a little bit closer.
You'll always have the hindsight, that post hoc. Oh God, I should have done that. Should have done this. But yeah, the layout of how you've done things will essentially influence how well you can run around the board. You'll be able to lead followers around, and those are sort of other tokens on the board, and that's another action you can take. And again, that will be better if you've got a good road network. You can share resources using a trade action if you've played either Pandemic or Eldritch Horror. Sharing stuff between you. You can herd dinosaurs, and that's an important one.
Oh boy, do not overlook the herd action as we did for 2 to 3 adventures.
Yeah, that's real important.
The herd action is varied on how you can take it depending on what equipment and what character you're playing as. But the basic version of it is you, along with one other character in the same space as a dinosaur, can herd it.
Mm.
That places a token under the dinosaur for that period of time. And when it comes to their activation, you will skip that next activation, which is crucial because it means it will stop something rampaging. Sort
of breaks the programming, right?
Yeah,
stops them from doing a bad thing, stops them from killing another dinosaur, moving on to a tour group.
Like, don't do the bad thing, please. Yeah.
But it's not the easiest action to achieve, as I say, depending on what character you're playing. Because if we didn't mention already, each character has their own benefit and action.
Yeah.
Which so, might well, make...
Potentially multiple different powers that they can get unlocked over the course of the game.
Yeah. If anyone can hear the audio in the background, that is the famous Frankosaurus.
I'm being savaged by being a small...
Savaging about
T-Rex.
All right, so we... talked very much at a high level about what you can do on your turn. Once your everyone's actions are completed, you're going to do a round end. And at the round end, you're going to activate the dinosaurs. And again, we talked about that real briefly, but is there anything you want to dig into a little bit more there?
Again, another key rule not to skip, as we did.
Mm.
A dinosaur will only activate once. So if it moves from one sector to another, it won't reactivate. So for example, if a herbivore in sector one moves north into sector four... when Sector 4 activates, it doesn't reactivate that same herbivore.
That's right.
Crucial to remember when carnivores potentially cascading from one zone to another, hunting everything in sight.
If you want to play on hard mode, that's how you do it. But yeah, you've got one sector card per location. As we said, they're face down at the beginning of the round. At the end of the round, you flip those all face up, and you're going to activate them in order from Sector 1 all the way through to Sector 6.
And it basically tells you, for carnivores and herbivores, they do one or two things in an order as specified, and they might move around or they might hunt or do various different things.
Yeah, and it'll also either... yeah, there'll be a storm and the power might go out and some other bits and bobs too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting and incredibly annoying, because all of the room actions depend on the power being on. So when the power goes out, you're like,
Yeah, that was a development after, I think, the third adventure. Start getting into that kind of territory of the potential power outages. The dinosaur activation is very logical. We found a couple of, not necessarily edge cases, but times where we did keep having to re-refer to the instructions on quite exactly what it will do. There's a hierarchy of how the dinosaur will activate, which we found a little frustrating, I think, at least.
Yeah,
to start
I think we'll
with.
Come to that with the rules critique or whatever. But yeah, you're right. There are a few edge cases in this game. I mean, it's to be said, I suppose, as part of this discussion on the mechanisms, it's a relatively heavy co-op.
Oh, it's definitely a meaty co-op. And I think you guys have said it, but with the volume of stuff that you add to every game and the fact that every scenario is like completely different, it's not easy to just pick up and play. Mm. And if you know, even if you're playing with the same group for every session all the way through all 12 sessions, unless you're playing it sort of relatively frequently, I can imagine it'd be very difficult to sort of remember all the rules. You've got a massive pile of reference cards there.
I don't know. Do we dig into this now? Sorry, Simon.
Yeah, I was going to say, the fundamental mechanics from one adventure to another don't change. There's been generally one more thing each time.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall fundamentals don't change. You're always looking to take a certain number of actions in a certain way. There's just normally complications, I suppose, would be the best way of describing it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting balance. Whether we get into the... yeah, let's discuss it now because we're thinking about it. The rules are spread out in what I found to be at the very least, not a straightforward way, because...
it feels a bit abstruse, so it's quite awkward.
You've got your main rule book, which has got your general setup. You've then got your adventure book for that particular adventure you're playing, which is contained in its own envelope, which will then give you the adventure-specific setup. And then you've got this rule ring binder, which is its separate thing. And then you've got your reference card, which is double-sided, which contains your character actions on one side and the dinosaur hierarchy of actions on the other.
You've got your character rules.
Yeah,
that's
before you then get into character-specific rules or dinosaur-specific rules, which change.
Yes. And it feels like there's not one place I can go to where I'll be certain I'll find the exact piece of information I need, which has been frustrating at times because I've been flicking through one book and then going to another place and checking that. And then maybe a third place on occasion going, well, hang on, what does the dinosaur do now?
Yeah, where's my single source of truth?
And as much as it's, when you do find it, it is perfectly sensible and you can follow the instruction that you've got in front of you, it's not necessarily obvious where you're finding that. At least I found that.
No, I think you're entirely right. I think the disparate nature of where you find rules is a problem, right? And I don't think it's resolved particularly well with this ring binder and separate adventure book and rule book approach. I get it with a legacy game. It's difficult because you're trying to drip feed and bring rules into the game over a period of time. But I feel like there's got to be a better solution than this, which I feel like I don't like to be scrabbling around between three or four things to find the thing I want to know, right?
Yeah, I like, and you see this sort of in a lot of legacy games. You get a rule book that'll have a bunch of blank sections in it, right? And over time, as the rules get drip fed in, you'll put a new sticker in the book, and that is now a new rule that you can refer to. But it's all in one place.
Yeah, and
this, I know what they've tried
to do. This had some of that.
Yeah,
it did have rule 17 in. Okay, yeah, now do field research.
You can see what they've tried to do, and they've tried to help by having the reference charts, and they've tried to help by having a rule book with stickers in it, but. Because the scenarios are all sort of different and custom, it's difficult to sort of realise how that works.
I would have rathered, if anything, to have just a ring binder, a slightly bigger ring binder. It starts with the core rules, and then in the adventure envelopes, you just add more ring binder pages in.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty good. Or, I'm tempted to say, you know, perhaps a support book where every rule from the start is there and it's up to you whether you spoil yourself by looking through it or not.
Maybe. But... Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult, but yeah, it did just something to note. This is a heavier game than it first appears. And you think, oh, Jurassic World, family game. And, you know, look at the artwork. It's great and really appealing. And on the face of it, the mechanisms aren't that bad. It's action, like Pandemic, 9 actions, and then you activate dinosaurs. But it's everything else on top of it which adds to complexity. It's layers.
Does the game have, an age rating on the box?
10+.
10+?
Probably.
That'd be pretty tough at 10.
Well, here's the thing. I assume in the same way that movie classification works, it's not. It's more content for gore and stuff rather than.
No,
we recommend this for someone who is.
Yes.
I don't
know.
Maybe I'm wrong. I suppose games may be slightly different for that kind of age rating. But yeah, I'm kind of seeing that as there's nothing in this that will be scary to anyone over this age. Mm. Rather than you need to be 17 and have a maths degree to to work out.
You
how
must
to play.
Be this height to ride on the ride.
To ride the dinosaur. With that said, then, how would you rate the complexity of Isla Nublar?
I think you guys are probably going to have a different feeling on this to me because I haven't seen it develop. Right, I just jumped in on game 7 where we're already in hard mode.
I think you're probably a good place to imagine this is how the game always was. How would you rate it?
I would say this is definitely complex. This is going to be up there as probably a 4. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to take in. There's loads of tokens. There's loads of moving parts. You've got to manage action economy. You've got to manage loads of evolving objectives. Mm-hmm. You've got to manage the behavior of the park and the dinosaurs. And it's a lot to keep track of. We could easily make a mistake. I think we would have made a mistake. If this was coming in and this was the first session and none of us have played it before, we would have missed a load of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
You guys have even said already you've missed stuff.
I think somewhere between a 3 and a 4. I know what Tom's saying. And yeah, as a first and only experience of this coming into it as its current game
coming
state.
Coming in raw.
Yeah, kind of a lot to take in. As someone who's played each and every episode as you have, Wayne, we have seen it develop and we've got that background experience of understanding, but as I've just said, we missed at least a couple of rules due to the layout and the kind of obscure setup. So yeah, there's a lot to think about, even if the actual fundamental gameplay isn't super complicated in and of itself.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's probably somewhere between 3 and 4. The fact that it leads you into it does help. But, and I think to Tom's point, Anthony, to be fair to both your points, it's the layers upon layers, right? So you start with this foundational layer that seems straightforward, and then you have everything else that goes on top. Okay, now I've got room rules, now I've got dinosaur rules, now I've got individual player rules, now I've got to worry about research, now I've got to worry about the folio, and I've got to worry about all power of this other stuff, going out. And yeah, the layers build upon this could be a basic, easily understandable concept.
Lots of back and forth thing, it seems like, which if you have got a grip on it, and it might be as much as anything through dint of us not playing all that frequently, you know, it's taken us a while to get to Adventure 7, unfortunately, but perhaps more regular play. You know, you do one session a week for 3 months, because it's effectively a 12-session game. Mm-hmm. You might keep it well more in your mind than we have been. So I will give it that.
True.
But yeah, on the heavier side.
All right, let's talk about the theme and gameplay interaction. Does the game feel thematic? And does the gameplay work together with the theme?
I would never have expected these kind of mini games to go with the wider concept of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World.
True.
That being said, I don't hate them, but that part of it, the mini room thing, I wouldn't say massively thematic for me.
I'd agree.
They're not things that feature heavily in the films. They are related to the theme.
Yes.
Although maybe not necessarily their implementation.
Yeah.
But they're not things that feature in any of the Jurassic Park or Jurassic World films.
Yes.
It's always been more about the crisis management, like, you know, the dinosaurs are out. No, when the dinosaurs are out, no one's fucking around building more dinosaurs anymore.
No, that's it. Yeah. We panic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are some elements that integrate really well, such as the building of the infrastructure of the island.
Yeah, I think planning out the island has been fantastically thematic. Mm. You really are sat there thinking about how you want everything to interact or potentially interact depending on what comes next.
If you put a carnivore here, it'll do this, and maybe we should build some barriers to put that guy there, and, you know, the road network needs to be better to be able to deal with this dinosaur. That feels nice and thematic.
Yeah, and you unlock a new set of items and they tell you that you can, you know, do this or that. And you think, oh, yeah, that's really cool. That feels like I'm on Isla Nublar. I'm a dinosaur herder, you know.
Exactly. That side of it, the park planning, pretty good. I'd probably agree that the minigames bit, the implementation of that, it's abstract. It's pretty abstract.
For the most part,
That's fine. That's fine.
That's not a bad thing. It's just a comment.
One of the rooms feels like I'm doing merchandising, which I worked in retail. I don't mind a bit of merchandising. Keeping the power on, I think, is pretty cool.
That's pretty thematic to some extent, yeah.
A bit,
how it's done.
It's kind of very, well, it's quite a high degree of luck in it, I think, which, again, can be frustrating. The DNA sequencing is, it's more that it kind of gives you the feel of that area of the movie's development. You know, they are pissing about with dinosaur DNA and adding in all kinds of weird stuff.
Yes, yes.
But the way it actually plays out is quite, it's very, that's the most mathy of the bits of the game. So.
Yeah.
But on the whole, not a bad integration of theme and mechanisms, I think. Or somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the flow of the game. What do we think of the gameplay flow? Is the turn length all right? It's cooperative, so that is slightly different in approach. I suppose flow in this instance would be, I suppose, easy to manage the admin of the game versus the playing of the game.
It's probably worth starting by saying it took, 20, 30 minutes to go through all of the admin at the beginning of the game and make all of... There's a load of group decisions that you do before you even start playing the scenario.
Like you mentioned, similarly to ISS Vanguard, that admin is the game. It's part of the game.
It's all the development of the board. It's spending your resources from the last session.
Exactly. To unlocking stuff.
Yeah, to build your roads. You decide what you're going to do before you see what the next session is. You build some new roads. You build some barricades.
Hire a goat.
You hire some... you get some goats. Yeah. Strategically place them around the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, that like admin stuff... is like almost like its own mini game.
Yes,
it's crucial to think of it as part of the game rather than a precursor to it.
Yeah.
Yes. The actual board setup, putting out the tokens, dinosaurs, laying out the cards for everyone, and so on. Took about 7.5-8 minutes, so a reasonable amount of time for literal setup.
That's not too bad.
But yeah, the working out, oh, we gained this, we did this last time, we've got a certain amount of budget, we did a certain amount of research, we can unlock a new set of things.
Yeah, you couldn't necessarily say, okay, everyone come around to my house, I'll set up the game in advance, because you can't. Because the first half an hour of the game is, okay, now we're going to make all the decisions about how we develop the park before we do the next scenario. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the flow is kind of unusual in that regard, because it's heavily weighted to this admin section. And then you have this long, relatively substantial game.
It is a very long game, yeah. A
couple of hours worth of game.
This adventure today felt particularly long.
I'd say
this was an unusually long one for us.
I feel like it was the most complex one so far.
Mm. Each individual objective was that much harder.
Yeah, it was much harder. Yeah, I think it was that much harder because of the complexity.
No, I didn't find myself wanting it to finish.
No, I did enjoy the whole way through.
I think that's, and again, you know, we keep saying the word admin, and I don't want it to sound like you're number crunching or anything. It's very much a case of scratching off some scratchy offs, which is always great fun.
Sticking some stuff on the board or whatever.
Yeah, sticking some stuff down and kind of hedging your bets as to what you think might happen and how best to handle the upcoming adventure.
And here's the thing that you mentioned actually while we were doing it, Tom, is that it is interactive and engaging. You're making decisions together.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
It's sort of planning, long-term planning for the game.
Does Legacy of Isla Nublar respect your time?
I think you need a significant amount of time to play this game.
And yes, I would say.
Because it's a legacy game, you need to come into this knowing that it's a legacy game, knowing that it's going to be quite a significant investment of time.
It's going to eat your time.
Each session, as far as legacy games go, each session is quite long.
It's going to be a 3-hour beast.
It's definitely on the longer side for the legacy games that I've played.
Yes. The inclusive of the setup, portfolio, gameplay, teardown.
Yeah, it's your game for the evening. It won't be this and then something. It's unlikely
to be. This
and
then a nap.
Yeah, well, quite. And when I ask that question, I ask it from the point of view of me. So when I play games, I want my game to set up easily, to be easy to learn and explain, and to play it within an hour or two and to put it down or put it back away again, right? So when I think about games in that sort of vibe, most of my games fall into that. So when I think about this, I think it really respects your time because you're spending a lot of time with the setup, a lot of time writing stuff down, a lot of time relearning rules, looking between things to work out how things work, and then playing it.
Well, I tend to lean slightly heavier than yours. My collection leans towards the heavier side. I think I probably personally feel like this is okay, but I like a big, long, crunchy game. And I really like the investment, the decision-making, the long-term planning sticks, if you excuse the pun.
Are you somewhere in the middle, Sam, or are you more towards Tom?
In terms of, you need to invest the time. It's an exception for me, I'd say, in terms of being both a legacy game, which I don't particularly own or play, and also, a much longer game in terms of setup, understanding, adjustments, and all the rest. But at no point have I felt it outstayed its welcome and that I wanted it to finish or that I wish I could move on to the next bit.
That is an excellent point you make. It's like, sometimes when I think about if games respect my time, do I think I don't like this thing that I'm doing right now? I feel like this is a waste of my time. I don't really feel that way about this game.
Well, here's a thought. We talked about this. This game, as a legacy game, fails forward.
Yeah,
if you lose,
is great.
You still get something. The game adjusts to the fact that you've lost and it says, fine, move on to the next session. Here's what you get instead.
That's a great point you've raised. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And when we compare that to something like Jaws of the Lion...
I hated that about Blue
Paper. It's fucking awful. It's the worst thing about it.
You play for 3 hours, you lose, and then the game's like, oh, by the way, start again.
And you're like, no, there's missions to go through. I don't want to start again. I prefer this.
Quite glad I haven't had that experience.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, this is always, I've felt from start to finish, this has been an engaging and relatively exciting game despite its length. There's been no point where I'm like, oh no, we've got to do another two. Oh, oh, we need to make sure we survive, and we're still, you know, we've got this and this to do, and you're always kind of engaged, and maybe that's why we're all a bit tired now, because you are always...
It is very engaging.
You're always thinking about what's next. We didn't quite get that sorted last round, so you need one of your actions to do that, and then I can get to... And then, oh, and now this thing's come up, and there's always a lot going on. So
with that, then...
It's long, but there's a lot happening.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. I think that segues us nicely into that final thoughts section of the podcast, which is... What is your favourite thing about Legacy of Isla Nublar? And is there anything that you don't like about it? I suppose let's start with the good things. What's your favourite thing about it?
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I suppose to reiterate that it kind of does, at least to a degree, bring to life that now long history of Jurassic Park. You know, the... First movie was what, early 90s?
Early 90s.
93, 94, something like that.
It's got a good legacy to, pardon the pun, Jurassic Park has a good legacy, and this legacy game of it, I think, encapsulates so many of the highlight points of the movie series. Mm-hmm. Brings to life that feeling of designing a park, managing the crazy chaos, which we know from the movies that very much plays out on the board. And yeah, really feeling like you're having an impact on it, as much as then the rule book might tell you that you must implant shark DNA into a stegosaurus.
And you think, why the fuck would I ever do this? But apparently, that's what I'm doing today.
It keeps things exciting. And yeah, I've just really enjoyed the experience so far.
Interesting to hear your thoughts, Tom, having come in completely dry.
I thought I got a great cross-section of what the game has to offer.
Right.
Doing the admin stuff, getting to see and discuss... how you guys have developed the park so far and what has been good or bad in your experience, so that we can sort of discuss and decide how we want to spend the resources for developing the park further. That's really cool, and I really like long-term planning in these sorts of games because it means that the game will always play out slightly differently each time, and it's got enough to it that it sort of keeps throwing curveballs at you, right? I really, really like the art that we've talked about, and I really, really like the little, like, dynamic figures that it gives you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then logic puzzles and action economy and crisis management is, like... right in the niche that I like.
So. Yeah, the bread and butter of the co-op stars.
I was glad that you liked it. I was pretty sure that you would.
Absolutely. Well, actually, I talked about this with Wayne just the other week. We've played a bunch of different Legacy games.
Yeah.
And I, by far, prefer a Legacy game that's co-op.
Yes.
Oh, God,
because I like working together for long-term planning, or even if it's just, even if it's a little bit more self-contained from session to session, I like... working together for these sorts of games.
Yeah.
It feels like everyone's sort of on the same page trying to beat the game over the course of however many sessions. I don't like more competitive Legacy games quite so much, especially ones that are directly competitive.
I'm not sure I've played more than one competitive Legacy game, and I can see it that, as you say, you're kind of needing to focus on overcoming the game's obstacles rather than fighting each other and finding you're in a terrible position to advance the game state. In a Legacy game, you definitely need to work together. I think, well, for my liking, definitely works.
Yeah, well, there's, in that direction. To sort of say a little bit more on that, with Legacy games that are competitive, they have an extra element to them that the game has to balance some sort of catch up mechanic and development mechanic to keep the players on an even footing all the time. And if they don't get that right, it's very easy for one or two players to snowball or one or two players to not feel like they're enjoying themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Co-op games, you have a better chance that everyone's enjoying themselves, provided you have the right group, as opposed to a game where you're in direct opposition to players where someone always has to lose. Potentially everyone except for one person always has to lose.
I'll pivot and say that I actually really quite like the underlying engine of this, partly because it gives me throwback thoughts to some of the first games I played, like the Pandemic series, which was some of my first introductions to modern board gaming. And I actually think it's quite well done. I mean, everything is quite Euro-y. It's open information. There's not a huge amount of random chance. You can, if you want to, spend time scouting and searching to make everything open information.
You have the option.
And program. You have that option available to you if you want to spend the action economy.
I don't know how, because the action economy is tight, I don't know how much you could respond to that information.
Knowing it will give you an idea as to whether or not the carnivores will hunt or just move.
Yeah.
And will give you at least an idea of which carnivores you should focus on, if any.
Yeah.
So I think there is an option to do something with the information. I think typically when we have been in locations where the cards are revealed, that has been useful to know.
Yeah. I'll definitely. Yeah. But yeah. You'll never know everything.
You'll never know. You're right. You won't have the actions to do it all. But I think the underlying engine of the game is quite sound, and I enjoy the process of playing the game.
Yeah.
I just like
100% agree with that.
Yeah. I don't. I think some of the fluff and the mini games is okay. They're fine. They're okay. I've got no issue with those.
Yeah.
They are time sinks, but I enjoy that less than I enjoy the decision making of where should we go, which dinosaur should we herd, how do we get this VIP to this place, what cards can I use to help me get there.
Yeah,
that engine of it I really like.
That's exactly it.
Yeah,
that feels like the core of the game to me too.
Yeah, and that piece, like you say, feels very Pandemic, or even
solid.
Pandemic Legacy, right?
Yeah, right.
But then it's got the extra sort of like puzzle element sort of tacked on top of it.
Exactly.
As well,
so it's another layer. Yeah. And even with that foundational engine, it does some things quite differently. The way the sector cards reveal, that's different to something like the Pandemic series. And I like that.
Where you pull out a card every so many actions.
Yeah,
you just
exactly.
Pull out a card.
So this is different. It's going to be set and programmed in advance. That risk management side is always going to be the case in these sort of co-op games, but I think it's done very well here. And I just like the idea that once the dinosaurs activate, you sort of sit back and grit your teeth. And you're like, are they going to do this? Yeah. Is he going to ambush the thing? And he's going to break the barrier? Oh, and that, like in today's game, we totally, completely and utterly forgot about a tourist group at the top of the island.
And
we were like,
no. Never happened.
They got
absolutely... Yeah. Lunched by
the Velociraptors.
That's right.
The Velociraptors,
for some reason. And it's there the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, we could have talked about it, but like,
oh shit, yeah, forgot about them.
And then, and we sit back and we watch, we're literally watching it happen. Like, I can imagine we're watching a monitor in the control room going,
Where did that tour group come from?
Oh no.
and then the next objective that came out was like, get two tour groups to a place. And we were like, oh, thank God, we've still got two tour groups.
One of them got eaten. It was, fabulous. I mean, so I think the core engine of the game is quite sound, and I very much enjoy it. Is there anything you didn't like specifically that we haven't already covered?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll recap that the rules were unnecessarily weirdly given out, I think. But off the back of that, we might have potentially scuppered our chances of ever finishing the game if we hadn't mitigated the loss of something.
Right, I see what you mean.
So there was one game early on that it felt like there was just absolutely no chance. It came out on the last round, and the board isn't huge. It's at most six zones long and four zones wide.
There's 20 spaces on the board, right?
But if you're in sector one and you need to go and suddenly fix a dinosaur in sector six, it will take you two of your three actions at least to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So if on the round five, and say that most of you are similarly, or you're inside the science building or whatever else, it felt like occasionally, and maybe it's just the way we played it, but there were things that suddenly became a crucial objective that you fundamentally couldn't do. We sat for a good while and went, and I think, was it the game with Nick, I think, brain? And like, well, if Nick can't work out how we can do it,
there's no way.
Here's
a thought. Would some mechanic in the game that allows you to peek at the round cards before they happen
have helped? That would absolutely, it would have, I think so. Yeah, because it would allow you to position yourself in advance.
Knowing that the round one and five things are, completely not optional, you must do them. Being able to, having some way of being able to see those might have made a difference, you think?
I do think so.
It means that it'll give you time to prepare and assure you that you don't over focus on something that is less important.
You're
by
right.
Far.
I think that's a good point. Any sort of last round gotcha is going to necessarily feel bad. Mm. Right? It's going to feel like this sucks. We've done really well, and now like the game is telling me I have to do this.
Okay.
You know, or fuck you, game.
Can I flip it around then?
Yeah,
do you think the game would be notably easier if all the cards were revealed all the way through? But you know, if you said house rule, we just know what the round 1 to 5 cards are.
I don't think it would be significantly easier, and I also...
You could try and optimise, right?
You could optimise, and I also think you could probably have adjusted the game to balance that.
Yeah, okay.
But and that's whether, an interesting
whether,
thought.
Whether you then spend yet more time going, oh, hang on, let's not deal with this, let's deal with, you know, 3 rounds time. And it you're almost second-guessing yourself the whole way through.
Though. I would say, Tom, I suppose you could, but I think probably if we played that scenario out, the amount of, I suppose, downtime discussing would would
that's exactly what I'm
triple,
thinking.
Right?
You were like, oh, well, we need to make sure we're here by then, and then working backwards from that, we need to make sure we're doing
so. You'd fall into the Gaia Project deterministic puzzle problem. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
And it takes...
see everything 20 turns out, but do you want to?
Yeah, exactly.
it would then remove a lot of that kind of theme interaction, I think,
Oh
no, the dino's broken out just now. Okay, shit's gone down, we need to fix it, which is fine. But I do wonder if there's going to be points, you know, you mentioned we lost a tall group allegedly and still needed two.
They're still on the island somewhere, they're just unaccounted for.
If we'd lost two, we could never have completed that objective. Yeah. That objective would incrementally have screwed us every round.
And we would have lost the game.
Yeah.
And there was no way back from it.
Yeah.
Potentially.
No. Correct. So, yeah, I think there's two sides to that coin, I think. Yes, it sucks and it feels bad when you get a gotcha sort of, now you have to be the other side of the island. You never knew. So, tough shit. Deal with it or don't. So there is that side of it. But then the other side of that coin is it's also exciting having the unknown, right?
Also, we probably should have looked after our tour groups.
Probably should have.
There is that. The early adventure, I think we could probably have done better if we'd read all of the rules in all of the places and realised what was available to us. But
probably.
That's kind of by the by. Now it's happened and stickers have been stuck. So.
I think we're doing just fine.
Smaller negatives versus huge number of benefits and positives from my liking.
Anything you didn't like, Tom? Again, coming in as
nothing,
the new...
Nothing to add, no. I think, I've spoken to Simon about it a couple of times, but yeah, the rules vagaries, obviously that's on you guys because I haven't read the rules for this.
Mm.
It was perfectly fine sort of learning it, but I think, you know, fortunately I've got the right sort of mindset for picking up these sorts of games. But I could see it being pretty rough. If you pick this game, if you spend 100 quid on it, and then you open it up and you're like, oh my God, the rules are just all over the place. And it's not easy to sort of cross-reference things. And because it's a legacy game, you don't necessarily want to look stuff up on the internet because you might get spoilers.
There's
a lot of investment, right?
There's a reasonable amount of non-spoilery support out there. The prologue or introductory one you can replay without any permanent additions to stuff. So you can
That's something.
You can get a real grip on the kind of periodization of action economy and so on. We need to make sure we're covering this before we start pissing around with this one and so on.
Well, that's fine. I don't have any
anything extra to add?
Negatives to say. No.
Yeah, I'm not going to over egg the point. Yeah, the rules thing is the major bugbear for me. I don't really mind the surprises. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, the fact that you fall forward. If I lose the game on the last thing, I mean, whatever. I didn't. I don't care. On to the next one.
Kind of feels like it's designed for you to lose in a way at times,
I think,
the way it's set out.
I agree. I think you're probably obliged to at some point lose
a couple
of games. You're
going to lose
absolutely. All right. So we talked about the likes and didn't likes. Let's talk about your final thoughts. If there's anyone you'd recommend this for, types of people, and your final rating.
I mean, I think anyone with a fan following of the Jurassic Park series would get a good kick out of this.
Yeah.
It's not for the most casual of players, but
agreed.
I don't think it's beyond the reach of your average person. If you have really, you're like, oh, Jurassic World game, I can build my own Isla Nublar park, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy games price, you know, we've we've always got that thought to make. Some people go, oh, yeah, but I'll only play it this many times. I like the thought of, but you'll definitely play it at least
that many times. I always think about it the other way around. For me, most legacy games are you actually going to manage to play it this many times? Yeah. I own plenty of games that I've played less than 12 times.
Exactly. It's such a crucial thing to keep in mind when you do look at that price and go, all right, £90, that's quite a lot more than another game.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think there's a Jurassic Park Unmatched game out there for £25-30 or whatever, right? But you're not going to get anything like the kind of game out of that as you will for this, for the type of game that it is. I am glad I didn't have to pay for it. Having played as much of it as I had, I don't think I'd be in any way disappointed for having done so.
Okay.
If you retroactively had to pay for it now.
Yeah. I think it's a... Potentially, then, I'll say, if you've got two or three people that you know will always play with you, split the cost between you, £30 each.
Yeah.
And you will get 30 hours plus of solid, super exciting, super engaging game out of this.
I think that's entirely... fair.
Yeah, yeah. You need to have the right group and the right mindset for a legacy game.
You do.
That's my be-all and end-all of legacy games is if you don't have a group that will commit to playing it, just don't even bother with legacy games. Mm. There is a very specific strata of people who will be interested in legacy games. And then you pile on top of it the fact that this is quite a heavy legacy game and it's... quite long-winded, right? It does really narrow down the people and the groups I think that would be interested in playing it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think final thoughts wise, it is it's a wonderful IP.
Yeah.
And they've done a pretty good job of respecting the IP.
I had a great time looking at when we were picking the random DNAs to splice into the dinosaurs and trying to predict what those DNAs would add to those dinosaurs. Yeah, I was like, Komodo dragon, that boy's going to be venomous. Komodo dragon venom. Really, really horrible stuff. And we put it on the Stegosaurus. It's like, that guy's now a carnivore. Okay, I sort of probably saw that coming. Or the stealth triceratops.
Yeah.
Cuttlefish DNA.
It's legitimately fun. Like, really fun stuff. And it does it justice. It does the IP justice.
It really does,
Which I think is good, both in the production and I think, again, as I talked about, the core mechanisms of the core design of the game. It works really well. I think it's for fans of the Jurassic Park IP that are also board gamers that like cooperative games. Kind of narrow, but if you're in those buckets, you're going to get...
There's a Venn diagram and there's going to be plenty of people who are
plenty of people in that middle. I agree. Board gamers, like co-op games, like Jurassic Park. This will tick a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
If you're in it, as you mentioned, Tom, for the long haul. And I think you raise a good point, Simon. You will play this at least 10 times or 12 times, or whatever it is, for the completion. And that's going to get you more plays than I think a lot of games in your collection, if you're anything like me. Other final thoughts for value-wise, I think it's a bit much from my own
It's definitely opinion. The upper end on what I would like to spend on board games. I try not to buy very, very expensive board games. I have failed. but I go out of my way to sort of research the big games that I buy or back. And I think to sort of echo what Simon said earlier, if I'd just seen this on the shelf, I probably would have passed it by.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. Not because it's not an interesting IP. I love Jurassic Park. I love dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But there's something about legacy games that generally puts me off most of the time because of the time investment.
Mm.
And I already own too many games anyway. So
yeah. Yeah, but
that's your own fault.
Yeah, we're kind of outliers in that respect, I guess, to some extent. Yeah. So
need to be discerning, right?
Yeah, yeah. Quite. Final rating then, everything considered.
I want this to be a really positive review.
It is.
I want to put it out there that as much
he's a shill for Big Funko.
I'm really not. I could easily pass by a number of their other releases. This one I thought looked great as soon as I saw it. I've not been disappointed, and I wouldn't hesitate to give this a 4 out of 5 for my enjoyment, even with that price point included.
Yeah.
Genuinely think that it is, for what you get, I mean, yes, it is the top end of what I'd want to pay, but Not disappointed in it at all.
I mean, my one-off experience, I'd definitely give this a 4. I had a great time. Really enjoyed it.
I mean, this game, to re-mention, if you didn't listen to our top 10 games of the current era, this made my number 10. I was so excited to get it to the table again.
Yeah, yeah.
After 4 plays or 5, and then the time of not playing it. Like, for a game like this to suddenly reach my top 10 ever as of the time of making it, like, that's impactful. Yeah, that says something.
Absolutely. I think about other cooperative games that I really like games that I love that are difficult. Because I like a very difficult co-op game. It's like my thing.
Project Elite.
It's like the things that I really enjoy. And I consider Project Elite the easier side of it. And I crank that up to the maximum difficulty every time.
Yeah, we know.
I know. It's my thing.
We ran out on bloody aliens.
But I think about things like Eldritch Horror as well. Like really difficult games with a relatively high degree of complexity.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think this sits there pretty well. I don't think I'd put it up there with Eldritch Horror, because my own personal view, I prefer that better. And the Pandemic series is although it has shared similarities, is significantly less complex. So this sits in its own sort of right. So this sort of sits in its own little bucket. So it's hard for me to give it a 4, because I think I'd probably rate Eldritch a 4 and Pandemic a 4.
No, that's fair enough.
So I'd probably stick this just below that, somewhere between a 3 and a 4 for me.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean it's an excellent game, and I'm saying that rating, considering the cost and considering what I already own.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think that's,
I take that as a very solid review then.
I'd say that's where I'd put it. Thanks for listening to Board Stupid. Subscribe to us to get updates and future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us anywhere on the internet except OnlyFans by looking for... By looking for Board Stupid UK, spelled B-O-A-R-D. Please check out our YouTube channel, where you're going to find all of our industry interviews, and we're going to be at UK Games Expo again this year doing press, so please do check that out. We'll be there live and doing stuff for you, and you'll also find some of our video reviews, and please check out the rest of our library. If you like our stuff, please interact with us, drop us a comment, give us a like. We very much appreciate everyone that does. But what about you? Have you played Legacy of Isla Nublar? Which was your favourite DNA genetically modified abomination that you've managed to create?
Yeah, I wanna know what some weird combos are that people have managed to
come up with. I need to know.
Yeah.
Shark Stegosaurus.
Sharkosaurus.
What could go wrong?
Absolutely nothing. Let us know what you've made. Let us know if you enjoyed Legacy of Isla Nublar and whether you think it was worth money. And until you do, we'll catch you again real soon.
Tom, why are you reclining? Tom, do your shirt up. Tom, please.
I'm oiled up.